As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
This is Talk of the Devils, the Athletic's podcast dedicated to Manchester United. And well, that was a bit better than we thought it was going to be, but not as good as it could have been, if that makes sense. Laurie Whitwell and Andy Mitten are with us. Laurie was at Anfield yesterday, so we're going to go through all the details of that 0-0 draw against Liverpool, all the fallout as well. And bizarrely, there's no midweek game to look forward to, which I think is just about the first time this season that I've said that when it's not been the international break. But we will find a few more nuggets to bring you, of course, like we always do, including the fact that Andy turns 50 tomorrow. Don't you, Andy?
Thanks for that. Yes, I do. And it's why I couldn't go to Anfield. My wife put me under strict orders at the start of the season.
So it wasn't because United had lost by an aggregate of 11-0 in the past two seasons. No. You weren't, you know, shying away from it.
I've been struggling with my recent trips from there, to be honest. And I did walk past it last week just to check on the construction of the new stand. You know what I'm like.
Make sure it's safe.
But it was open. It looked good, to be fair, Andy.
I know. Liverpool have done a good job with Anfield, and I'm slightly envious of how they're doing it. But I was banned from going. So there you go.
Sounds about right. I thought she'd actually would have done you a favour, really. But in some ways, it would have been quite nice to witness that and all the bitterness after the game as well.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting it. I wrote in The Athletic on Thursday, Friday that I'd never gone into a game so despondent about Manchester United's prospects at Liverpool away. We saw all the statistics. You read most of them out in the press box at Old Trafford last week.
Just to tempt fate, obviously.
Well, the only thing that gave me hope, and I said this yesterday, was football can be a really weird game at times. And I'm watching it in a pub, which I never normally do. I don't like watching games in pubs. I'm thinking, exactly what I do when I always go to Anfield is, if we can just get to the third minute without conceding, but like in 2022, we couldn't even do that. And suddenly we get to 5 and it's 0-0. And then it's 8 minutes. And then it's 12 minutes. Suddenly you're 15 minutes in. And United are stinking the place out. And it reminds you of that Mourinho game when he did the same thing. But you're growing in confidence all the time. And they're just defending like warriors. And suddenly Johnny Evans and Raphael Varane look like nothing's going to get past them. And at halftime, I was pretty confident that United would see out a 0-0, and that, all things considered, is a really good result.
Yeah, in a way, Laurie, it was one of the most comfortable 0-0 draws, having had, 30% possession and conceded 34 shots that I can ever remember. United just didn't look like conceding, despite the fact that they were conceding shot after shot, chance after chance, but they weren't clear cut. I can't even remember Andre Onana having to make a really top level save.
I think that one from Virgil van Dijk in the first half was pretty good. But again, if he'd let that in, you might have pointed the finger and said, should have done better there. I thought Andy was calling him Johnny Barresi then for a second.
I meant to.
he looked pretty good, didn't he, on the ball. I mean, everyone's thinking, 35-year-old Anfield, you know, he only came into Manchester United on a free because he was trying to keep fit to, you know, maintain his potential for going to another club elsewhere. And actually, he's performing really well at Anfield. Varane returning. I thought he was excellent. You know, his positional play, his marshalling in the defence was superb. Luke Shaw just shows the quality that he's got at left back. You know, certain tight situations that he was able to wriggle out of and actually provide a bit of attacking impetus. But yeah, it was the defensive organisation, I think, that saw United through. And I mean, as you've touched on, they didn't actually carry a great threat, but on a couple of occasions, a better pass or a better choice of shot. You know, Rasmus Højlund was the best one, and Alejandro Garnacho also had a really good opportunity. They could have actually nicked it. But I don't know, would that have sent you delirious on your 50th, Andy? Would that have been too much excitement?
At his age.
Listen, Mr. Host, I saw you dancing on Saturday. You can be cheeky, a little bit cheeky
whoa,
with me,
whoa, whoa.
But
what?
But don't,
there's a party.
Do not
was
push
not
your luck. yes, you were young, new father. well, I knew nothing about this, by the way, so I'm feigning innocence. I mean, if Garnacho would have put that in, it would have just been a John O'Shea. Yeah. Remember that game? Obviously, we don't forget it. Liverpool were clearly the better team that day, as they were yesterday. They dominated, but football can throw up these moments. And United defended fantastically well. I thought there was, I'm going to pretend this is my thought here, but someone who knows far more than I do said there was a good emotional stability without Bruno Fernandes there, which I thought was quite interesting. And Kobbie Mainoo's positioning really limited Liverpool's passing channels and effectiveness. It was a really good result. I'm hoping that, I think Erik ten Hag saying these players are behind me, I think he can feel vindicated, because everyone, including myself, thought that United would get tonked at Anfield, and it didn't happen.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Can we get into some of the detail on some of the players in the game, Laurie? I mean, Mainoo's the one, I think, who has come away with new fans, new people writing about him. He's shown his talent to us in the last few weeks, but to go there and do that at Anfield, stepping in for the Manchester United captain who's suspended, and to play like that is hugely encouraging, isn't it?
Yeah, massively. I mean, Andy was on this, when was it, 18 months ago that you wrote your piece on him? Maybe not quite as long as that, but a really good piece on The Athletic from a while back. He's been a player that United have been excited about for a good while. You know, the FA Youth Cup winning side, he was only 16. He was a first-year scholar, so, you know, he could have played in the next season, and he's actually a really influential player, probably the best player. I know Garnacho took the headlines in that FA Youth Cup winning team for scoring the goals that he did, but Mainoo brought, as you just said, you know, that kind of emotional stability and maturity to the team, even as a 16-year-old. And then, you know, 2 years on at Anfield, you know, he'd made a brilliant first full Premier League start against Everton, you know, just across the way at Stanley Park. And he went and replicated that against Liverpool. I thought he was probably better, actually, against Liverpool, just because, as Andy said, the defensive shape that he brought, but also then when he got on the ball, he was actually United's best creator, really. You know, that pass for Garnacho was absolutely immaculate. And then also he did another sort of turn when he had three Liverpool players around him and released to Antony, who then, I think, was that the one where he actually beat Trent? He did really well, beat Trent, and then kind of crossed it low, and it was just behind Højlund. So, you know, these are chances that actually just a little tweak to the final ball then results in a goal, and you're thinking that's an absolutely perfect away performance, and he brings that to United. I mean, it's difficult, isn't it? Because he's 18, you don't want to get too excited too soon, but he does, I don't know, he just, the way he kind of carries himself. And also he got, I suppose he was a bit fortunate maybe to avoid a booking early on when he made a foul, and then he got a booking for, you know, 27 minutes in on Endo. He was just a bit late and he kind of accepted that. But, you know, 60 minutes he had to play there with, you know, a booking, a caution against that Liverpool midfield. He never really got trouble beyond that. There was a 50-50 that he could have gone into with Endo that he kind of just backed away from and then returned to his position. And just smart, intelligent play where he didn't then you know, dive in, get reckless, get a red card, and then all of a sudden the kind of momentum is with Liverpool. So, yeah, just a really positive display by him.
I said to Carl at the weekend, you are a professional journalist of Ghanaian heritage and you cannot pronounce his name correctly. Do you not think there's something is amiss here? You should be like the one correcting us, not the other way around. He said he's working on it.
All he needs to do is remember Ian's, you know, saying, Cobby rhymes with Robbie, like Robbie Williams, who was a member of your favourite band. Take that from back in the day.
I can't believe you gave me. Take that, I've done some tunes, you've got to admit.
Oh, absolutely. Which is your favourite, Andy? Gonna... Which were you dancing to on Saturday night?
If you're in a party and Never Forget comes on, the whole place will be bouncing. They'll be bouncing. I mean, Ian loves Take That. I've gathered that. Arms in the air, the full works. If I was looking at the four of us, I would say you would be the one who'd be most into Take That, Laurie.
Oh, I love it.
Well, what's your favourite tune then?
Bit of Shine. Go on, bit of Shine.
But isn't it top to see a young lad to coming through, local boy, and just being completely unfazed, not just by Goodison, but by Anfield? Because that side was so depleted through injury. And when I saw the team, I thought, geez, this could be a hammering. Because he's still a kid, but really mature performance. And as Laurie said, that pass to Garnacho was just wondrous. And his positioning was wonderful. And if he'd just, Garnacho, it looked like the ball got stuck under his foot. Imagine putting that in front of the cop.
Two FA Youth Cup winners. I mean, that would have been beautiful, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
I thought with that one, I mean, Alexander Arnold's sort of tugging him, isn't he? And it felt like either,
yeah,
I don't know, was it enough for him to go down? It would have given the referee a decision, but then Alexander Arnold just gets back, doesn't he, and nudges the ball away. But it was, I don't know, it was a close. He probably needed a bit more strength to push him off or shrug him off. But again, he's only a teenager.
One thing I'm noticing with this manager, sorry, is he's really big on his wingers doing defensive duties. And that is costing us in attack. It's the reason why we're not so creative. And I know he's been hammering home this point, but I thought Garnacho and Anthony, the defensive side of their game, was actually decent. Well, my one worry with Garnacho, because he is impressing me, because I have had doubts about him, he's quite easy to knock off the ball. I don't know whether he needs to go into the gym a little bit more, but whenever he gets the ball, he does look like a threat. He does run at players. He does try to take on players in a team where there's almost none of that when you're going away to Liverpool. So I thought he did all right.
Yeah, you're hoping that he has a summer like people like Ronaldo have had in the past, where they go away in May looking one way and come back in August looking completely different, having spent the summer swigging, what, protein shakes and filling up on chicken and whatever else. But we'll see with him. I mean, the maturity is definitely the word with Mainoo. He is only 18, but you get the sense he's not going to get carried away, even if we do. And just that quality on the ball, I mean, that's what United need in this midfield, Laurie, as well, isn't it? I mean, forget, you know, the future and all the predictions about that. Right now, actually, he's incredibly important to Manchester United in midfield. And it was interesting that it didn't feel like they missed Bruno Fernandes particularly, maybe in an attacking sense, but definitely not in a structural and defensive sense.
And it's difficult. He wouldn't have started Mainoo, would he? You'd think he would have put Bruno as number 10 and McTominay possibly deeper, although McTominay's best moments in games is when he's in that advanced position. So I don't know, it's difficult to sort of picture it. Maybe it's a bit of a blessing just to see, okay, this is, you know, Bruno's been such an important figure for United since he joined, you know, the kind of chances that he creates, but he does have that erratic edge to him at times where he can go out of position and that then leaves gaps elsewhere. So it was, just a look at this is what it can be like without Bruno. I'm not saying that's an improvement at all, because one of the aspects that I touched on in my piece is that United only managed to do one sequence of nine passes or more, which is the lowest number of any game this season. I think they had three a couple of times against Galatasaray, which kind of tells about the chaotic nature of the Galatasaray games and also the Liverpool's, you know, counter-pressing. But it also, I think, so, and it was partly by design, you know, Erik ten Hag wanting fast attacks. He sort of spoke about that afterwards. But also, I think it did tell of, you know, some lack of quality in certain moments and control that, you know, I think United could do better at. So that's where Bruno perhaps would improve things. But yeah, I think in terms of Mainoo, it's difficult to, I don't know, can you take him out of the team, really? I know he had Sofyan Amrabat next to him, and Amrabat had, you know, some poor touches, but also he did do a lot of dog work in the game. You know, he ran a lot and kind of closed down angles. I mean, Erik ten Hag came into Manchester United wanting a number six that could take the ball off the goalkeeper and progress the ball up the field. And that's, Maynard can do that, absolutely. So you're sort of thinking, okay, it's early. It's probably earlier than you'd like to, and you don't want to have to rely on him. But certainly you'd hope that he gets more minutes, maybe at Old Trafford as well. I don't think he's had a big start at Old Trafford yet. So maybe that's another sort of thing for him to kind of notch off. But yeah, it does... whilst it was a limited display by United overall, and certainly Liverpool were not at their best, the crowd was actually pretty irritated at times at some of the choices that Liverpool players were making. It was one of those performances that Erik ten Hag manages to get when it looks like his back's against the wall and, you know, there's turmoil all around the place.
You know, the number six you mentioned there, I asked Erik ten Hag, because he played number six, and he gave me a brilliant answer. And so you can tell what he's looking for in Cobby, which is huge responsibility. He says, when you play six, this is ten Hag, you're making difficult questions. That position, the pivot, as they call it in Europe, was my position. I didn't have the quality to play top, top level, but I played to my best in teams I played for. And it really impressed me how he knew Duncan Edwards, Nobby Styles, Roy Keane. It's an important position for a team. And I think a lot of managers played in that position. Pep, Ancelotti, Xavi, Louis van Gaal, Dick Advocaat, Xavi Alonso. You're in the middle of the pitch. You have to see everything 360 to scan everything. A six has to take responsibility for the whole organisation to be a connector, to link in and out of possession. I thought that was a really good answer about Kobbie Mainoo.
Well, you look at the importance of Michael Carrick in the past to United for similar reasons. Down the road at City, Fernandinho and Rodri have been the cornerstones of Pep Guardiola's successful sides as well. I mean, it is a very, very important position. What happens with Casemiro when he comes back, though? Because surely he's got to play that role, hasn't he?
What happens with your voice, by the way? You sound like you've had a heavy weekend. Could you just, before I answer that, could you just confirm or deny that you were pretending to be Sean Ryder out the Happy Mondays singing Hallelujah? As 12 turned to 1 on Saturday night.
I'm surprised you
yes
could remember,
no.
Andy, that actually was
I just
going
thought
on,
a yes but... or no. My voice doesn't sound anything like as bad as yours.
No, okay.
You were trying to be Sean Ryder and Bez at the same time.
Walking around looking for maracas, yeah, at 1 o'clock in the morning. Anyway, where were we? Casemiro, Laurie. Should he be... What happens when he comes back? Should he play further up the pitch? Or I mean, am I getting too carried away with Cobby like Robin?
I think it at least gives United another option, doesn't it? Like, I mean, he was brilliant last season, Casemiro. He started this season and it felt like he wasn't at that same level. He subsequently got a hamstring injury. I'm not sure exactly when he's going to be back, but I think it might be the new year, right? So you've got a few games yet before we come to this kind of dilemma, I suppose. But again, his best moments for United have probably been when he's been advancing the ball, which is kind of weird given his career at Real Madrid, where I guess he just, you know, allowed Luka Modric and Toni Kroos to do the creative work more so. I mean, could you have Mainoo, Casemiro and Bruno as a sort of three almost, and allow,
yeah,
you know, Casemiro and Bruno to perhaps get a little bit more forward? But that I do think that perhaps limits Cobby a little bit, because you know, he does have that pass in him, you know, that kind of that ability to turn defence into attack, but maybe that's, you know, that's best served from deep, like an Andrea Pirlo kind of style. And again, I'm not getting carried away and saying that Kobbie Mainoo is Andrea Pirlo, but that kind of function in a team. Yeah, I mean, Casemiro was always brought in by United because it got to a point in the season, they'd lost two games, there was panic, and he was available. He wanted to leave Real Madrid. United paid a lot of money for him, big wages, and he transformed. He saved that first season for Erik ten Hag, I would say, perhaps more than any player at all that then joined. That being said, he perhaps wasn't exactly what United or ten Hag needed, wanted. It's a really interesting debate as to what happens with Casemiro as the season goes on.
The manager wanted Frenkie de Jong. That was his absolute number one. And the more it dragged on and on and on, United needed to do something, and that's when Casemiro came into play. I thought Casemiro was fantastic last season.
Yeah.
I'm still not convinced by this argument that his legs have just gone, as if in June he just switched off and went, that's me done as a player. But he wasn't playing well at the start of this season. I know his goal scoring statistics were impressive, but we could see that it wasn't the Casemiro who'd been so dominant in matches. Like his first start against Everton last year, he was fantastic. Kobbie Mainoo is really encouraging. I think he needs to be handled correctly. I think that Erik ten Hag will do that. you can look elsewhere to see how other super talented players have been overused and then picked up major injuries. Pedri and Gavi at Barcelona, both world-class players. Jude Bellingham is doing absolutely fantastically, but some of these lads were being asked to play 60 games in a season. We're nowhere near that with Kobbie Mainoo, but handle him correctly. He is young. He's going to have bad games. But the fact that he's done it at Everton and Liverpool away is so encouraging out of the darkness that so much of this season has given us.
And the fact that United aren't in Europe anymore, so, you know, and out of the Carabao Cup, so the level of games that they had to play last season just isn't going to be the same. So you kind of think, actually, that might serve someone like Mainoo well. And just on Casemiro, I think earlier this season, a lot of the issues were stemming from him being advanced and having to sort of run back and him looking slower because he was running back rather than having just stayed in that position from the get-go. If you've got Mainoo next to him, maybe Mainoo stays and he can, you know, advance, and then it's not as frantic that he has to kind of try and plug a gap that's emerged.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what Erik ten Hag does, no doubt about that. Laurie mentioned his piece before from Anfield. It's on The Athletic right now. Remember, we have that offer on at the moment. You can gift a subscription to The Athletic for 1 year at the special discounted price of $19.99. To sign up, go to theathletic.com/ManUnitedPod.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Okay, just going to spend the last sort of 10, 15 minutes of the podcast just looking ahead a little bit if we can. Obviously, the point yesterday, Andy, for Ten Hag was really important just to sort of stem what was a growing scrutiny on his position, on Manchester United's fortunes as well. That's not going to go away clearly by one point at Anfield. But what has to happen next? Because West Ham away looks like a tough game. Aston Villa at home looks like a tough game. Where do United go from here?
I think fans need to be convinced of a more definitive playing style. Results will obviously shape the mood massively. As you said, there's difficult games coming up. Players, my best case scenario is that your top players come back. That's the one point Erik ten Hag has continually made about to change the team so much. Even at Anfield, I mean, how many times have Raphael Varane and Johnny Evans played together? And it's all about results. If you look a year ago, United went into 23 and that January-February period was the best. I look at the lack of games because we're out of the League Cup in Europe in two ways. I've always been told that getting into that Europa League would have been better for overall squad management because emerging players and fringe players can get minutes. And footballers want to play football. I'm still stung by that fourth place finish. I've got to be honest, that was a massive failure out of that Champions League group. But at some point, Manchester United have got to try and move on. We don't expect incomings in January. I mean, I've asked the manager that, and he doesn't expect that to happen unless a major target becomes available. But issues like financial fair play are still very real. be great to win the FA Cup and just getting wins together and a top four finish. What more can we hope for this season? If United finish in the top four and win the FA Cup, that would be a success. But we're coming at it from a low bar. I'm still surprised at how bad this season has been. Get your players back, get Lisandro Martinez in. You almost feel tight on Johnny and Raphael because they've actually done so well. And Harry Maguire, don't forget, was a player of the month last season. So the centre of defence seems like the least of our worries. The team's not scoring enough goals. We need to get players like Marcus Rashford playing well again. Rasmus Højlund needs more service. He needs to start scoring goals. Anthony's got to raise his game. There's issues all over the field. But I do think that Erik ten Hag knows what he wants. And I think he's got to convince more in the transfer market. Because if you're looking now and going, has Mason Mount been a success? You're pretty stretched to say yes. And he needs for Manchester United to start winning again. Because David Moyes has built a very competent side. Unai Emery has built an even better side. I've raved about him for years. He's a brilliant manager. I know the game's at Old Trafford, but Villa will be a really difficult side. And then you go into January, got Tottenham, got to consider them as sort of rivals, Wolves away. Big matches all the time.
Let's talk about the transfer window. Andy said it there that Erik ten Hag said he wasn't expecting to be able to sign anyone in January. If someone left, that would change things, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it depends who leaves. But yeah, for sure, Erik ten Hag would demand a replacement for anyone that left. You know, he's strong-minded. And, you know, for example, when it was being discussed, would Rafael Varane leave because he was out of the team and, you know, dissatisfied at that situation? Clearly, ten Hag would want a replacement in. Now, Varane's come back into the team, played brilliantly. And it's a bit of a Harry Maguire situation all over again. I don't know what happens when Harry Maguire gets fit. I mean, I guess you probably would try and play Maguire with Varane. The funny aspect of Anfield was that Varane was the left-sided centre-half rather than Johnny Evans, which is kind of what we'd been told, you know, was why Evans was in the team.
Same against Bayern when they're on the pitch together as well.
Well, that was the only thought. I wondered whether ten Hag just went, well, they played pretty well when he came on. I didn't want to change the situation when Evans had to come on against Bayern. He likes to sort of keep systems going, doesn't he? If it's worked in the previous game, he doesn't like to make too many changes. So I thought maybe that was it. But sorry, back to your original point, in terms of if a player goes out, then yeah, I think ten Hag would only sanction that if he could get a player in. Sancho maybe being the exception, but whether any team, you know, pays any money for him and can match his wages is another question. I was told that two loans might be possible. Again, it depends on the pricing, but clearly they're temporary fixes. They're not, you know, situations that are going to impact the financial fair play calculations to too great a degree. You'd think a striker we've been saying this for how many years, is required even just to sort of share the burden with Højlund. I know Martial has come in and done okay against Everton, but then, you know, pretty bad in his next game. Højlund, I thought, he looked really tired at the end of the Bayern Munich game. And I thought, again, at Liverpool, he only touched the ball like four times in the first half, which is incredible. I mean, Nunes, to be fair, for Liverpool also touched the ball about five times in the first half. So both strikers that have been bought for quite big money were having difficult afternoons. Overall, I think he touched the ball 19 times. And there is definitely an issue with service to him. Mark Critchley wrote a really good piece on that on The Athletic. But I thought yesterday there was also a little bit of Højlund not really moving in the right positions and kind of sensing the opportunities. So it is a bit of a two-way street there. That being said, I think he's, you know, a really promising player, and for 20 years old, we shouldn't be expecting everything. But just that's why maybe in January, if they could get an experienced player just to kind of share the burden a little bit at times, that would be helpful, I think.
Is Wout Weghorst available, Andy?
Yeah, we saw with Eriksen's injury last year, that's why Sabitzer came in. And when Weghorst came in, I definitely remember you calling me. It was Palace away.
He's going here.
And you liked the look of him, didn't you, Ian?
Don't remember that.
I won't punish you too much on that. No, do you remember standing on a box on Saturday singing Regret by New Order, thinking you're Bernard Sumner with your adoring wife looking into your eyes? Anyway, where were we?
Yeah, you've just taken me back to that moment, actually. Where were we? Indeed, you've completely thrown me. Thank you. Let's talk about something else that's not about Saturday night, shall we? The other aspect about January that obviously is a question mark at the moment as well is what happens with Jim Ratcliffe's investment. And the issue, I think, is that United are running out of time now for that to have any impact on the January transfer window.
Yeah, and we still don't know the answer. We keep hearing 2 weeks, 2 weeks. Remember when Gary Neville was injured and he was always coming back in 2 weeks and it became 1 year and 2 years? It's like that. The latest, as I understand, and is that the delay is more about the non-executive directors in the United board taking their time to review and sign off. It is a very tedious process, is my understanding of where we're at. I can't tell you any more than that, but that's well-sourced information.
The other aspect, Laurie, as well, the Premier League are going to have a look at all of this and approve it as well. And if it's taken a long time for everything to be put together and worked through, well, the league are going to have to look across all of that before it can go through. So does that mean January's impossible now, almost?
I think we're at a stage now where any, you know, investment from Ineos, Ratcliffe, it won't have any impact on January. I think United are already working on that basis. And even if they were, you know, get the green light today, ratified in double quick time. I don't think there's actually, they could invest their own money, but it's not as straightforward as them putting in this 90 million that you're allowed on the calculations and United being able to spend 90 million in January. It's not as straightforward as that. I need a full length article probably and a lot of smart people to help me explain exactly what the details are, but from what I understand it's not, the Ratcliffe situation isn't going to have a material impact on what happens in January, other than maybe at that point, you know, he's got more authority on the sporting side of things, and you know, there's that check to be made. We're today Brailsford, who is, we expect, going to be, you know, an influential figure on the sporting side, he has some kind of say, but it's not in terms of the financial aspects, it's not going to impact things.
Okay. Just to pick up on something that you said a couple of answers ago, actually, and it popped into my head, but I didn't want to disrupt the transfer chat. We didn't talk about Diogo Dalot's red card in the game yesterday. You mentioned Darwin Nunez. There was a bit of debate as to whether he could have been sent off for what he did in the first half, especially when you see Dalot getting those two bookings. I don't know, Laurie, if I can remember a situation like that where a player's picked up two bookings so quickly for essentially the same offence. What was the reaction after the game?
Bizarre. I mean, I just assumed that he'd already been booked in the game, and then obviously, no, he hadn't. His reaction was over the top, you know, it was kind of like arms waving, but that was the only thing I saw. You watch the replay and you see that he kind of disagrees with the first decision from Oliver in an aggressive way, which, you know, Dolo was correct, by the way. And then as he's raising the yellow card, he's sort of reacting to it. Is that a second action, or is that sort of all part of the same, you know, annoyance at the fact that a throw-in that you thought you'd won really well has gone against you? Yeah, I don't know. It seemed, I've not seen that before. Have I seen it before? I'm trying to think. Maybe once before. I've seen it once before when a player's been, well, done a foul where they should have got booked. The play's continued. They've done another foul it gets sort of stopped and they do get booked. And then they also get booked for the first foul. And so two yellow cards. And I think Martinelli got that, didn't he? So, yeah. And then you look at what Nunez did in the first half, where he's like, you know, ran into Johnny Evans with his elbow, you know, kicked the ball away and then, you know, sarcastically clapped the officials. It's like, oh, okay. And that's just one booking. So you just want a bit of consistency, don't you? So Ten Hag afterwards wasn't getting drawn into it. Just said, you know, you make up your own mind. You've all seen it. But clearly that's, I think, a very unfortunate red card to receive.
Right, one last thing to tidy up, actually, if we can. Andy, the under-18s for Manchester United, we haven't spoken about them this season, but my goodness, they're doing well, aren't they?
Doing really well. They keep winning and winning and winning, and it's lovely to see. And I know that Nick Cox and his staff on the youth side do not obsess about results. It's all about making a better person, a better footballer, making them more rounded. But if you're winning, then surely it's better than losing. It's a good group of young players, obviously the young, because it's under 18s,
but
some of them are like 16 years old. Yeah, you'd be a bit worried if a 29-year-old suddenly started bagging for the under 18s.
You might have a few of them in the 21s, to be fair.
Yeah,
I'm told it is definitely too early for them, all right? So don't start getting carried away, because fans do this. It's like, can't be worse than what we're seeing in the first team. Put that 7-year-old up front. Yeah. But one thing which I think is really important, statistically, these lads, maybe one or two will make it from that side. If you can be selling players, it helps massively with financial fair play. And this is something a team called Manchester City got on 15 years ago. And I remember speaking to one of their coaches. He was a former Premier League player, just socially. And he said, we're trying to sell players. We can be selling players for 3 million, which with football inflation is probably 15 million. City have done it really well. Of course, it helps when you've got a decent side. But the idea of it being really important for FFP was stressed to me. Lovely to see. We saw the Youth Cup win a couple of years ago. If there's another batch of young players coming through, fans absolutely love that.
Yeah, we certainly do. It'll be interesting to keep an eye on how they get on over the course of this season and beyond as well. That's it then for Talk of the Devils. Andy, from all of us, a very, very happy 50th birthday.
I want to know how he's actually spending it, though.
Do you know where I'm spending my birthday? On a plane. My wife's from Brazil, and I'm going to Brazil for the first time in 6 years. First time post-COVID. Trust me, it's not cheap to take a family to Brazil. Any advice for anyone who's looking for a future partner in a bar? Just try and find someone from Bolton or Stockport. It will be much cheaper. But we are going there, spending the whole day on a plane, going to the south of Brazil. It's high summer there, and I'm going for a couple of weeks. And
you're definitely finding like Rodrigo Possebon or something, aren't you? What obscure Brazilian footballer are you going to interview?
Well, I know Rodrigo.
Of course.
I always meet him when I go there. He's a nice lad. It is a football city that she's from, Porto Alegre. So Grêmio, so Fabio's just been there. Luis Suarez has just been there. Internacional. Anderson, I know. Good old Ando. So, of course, I will be doing my job, being a good journalist, meeting up with people. And, you know, I just say to my wife, just hold the Christmas dinner for a few hours. I've just got to meet. Let's see what I come up with. I'm not tempting fate, but I do try and meet people. But I hope everyone else has a top Christmas as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, safe travels, Andy. Enjoy your birthday. Thank you for being with us. And Laurie, thank you as well. I'm going off for a couple of Nurofen and some honey and lemon, I think. We'll see you on the next one. Take care. Bye-bye.
Athletic.